What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
This podcast is in partnership with Optometry Times.
Well, hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Defocus Media Podcast. I'm Jennifer Lyerly, and I'm here with Daryl Glover, as always.
Jen, what's going on? How's life been treating you?
I mean, I'm not going to lie, Daryl, I don't want coronavirus to infiltrate this podcast, but it's getting a little bit crazy here locally even. And I know patients are concerned, and optometry goes on. So we're still seeing patients. We're still giving great care, and things need to happen like cataract surgeries and things of that nature. So even though there's some concern in the local area, it's full steam ahead with eye care.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I actually had a couple of patients today that did not come in because they weren't feeling too well. And I was like, man, is it the coronavirus? They got people really thinking about us now? Because back in the day, they just would have showed up and just coughed all in my face and sneezed all over me. So, you know, I'm actually pretty thankful that people are actually now starting to think about us as physicians more than anything.
You know what? That is such a great point, because so many people come to the eye doctor when they are sick. And it's always baffled me why they're at home from work but choose to go to the eye doctor to see us. And maybe that will kind of keep us a little bit healthier if people continue these personal care and resecting and I'm like, oh, I'm sick, I shouldn't go out in public.
I agree. But Jen, I wanted to circle back. You mentioned something. There's some cutting edge technology that we're going to talk about today.
That's right. And it's specifically about surgery and optics available for our patients who are ready for, because the truth is, Daryl, when you're ready for cataract surgery, it is not just to medically remove a cataract anymore. This is a refractive surgery, and people expect excellent visual outcomes when they have this surgery done.
You know, here in the Triangle, people are very nerdy when it comes to technology. So we always hear about what's the latest and greatest when it comes to refractive surgery or cataract surgery or whatever it may be. So I know today's guest is really going to educate us on some cutting edge technology when it comes to this.
Please welcome to the show, Dr. Stephen Tersini. He's an ophthalmologist specializing in cornea and cataract, especially focusing on LASIK procedures and cataract surgeries with refractive outcomes. And he's going to break down all the technology that we need to understand that's new that our patients are going to need to understand to make the best informed decision on what surgical techniques or things above and beyond traditional surgery they may want to pay for or pursue out of pocket to get the very best refractive outcomes.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on today. I always love the opportunity to speak to with my brothers and sisters in optometry. Growing up in my training, in residency and fellowship, I worked really closely with a lot of optometrists, and they actually contributed a lot to my training, and I was able to see, you know, what a good job y'all do in terms of just taking care of patients and educating them and setting them up for success when they come in for procedures to have with us. So I'm happy to talk to you and all the everybody listening about the different options people have these days.
It's really such a pleasure to have you on the show, because I love what you just said about how, you know, in optometry, really what we do is we tee the patient up so that you as the ophthalmologist can knock the outcomes out of the park. And the best way for us to do that is to understand what kind of toss you need, basically, to get
definitely
the success with your swing.
Yeah, the patients who come in who are already educated by their optometrist. Now, you guys are on the front line seeing them every day. You oftentimes have a good relationship with them. They trust you. And if you're able to provide them good, reliable, and accurate information, it just makes our job so much easier. And it makes the whole process so much smoother.
So before we get started, let's dive into your background. Where did you go to school? How did you get into the wonderful world of eye care? And also, I want to do a little more digging, because I was looking you up prior to our podcast, and number one, you have a beautiful family, by the way. You have to tell me about time management and five kids. I don't understand how you do that and do all this stuff at the same time. Jen and I are suffering with just having one kid, and we have five over there. That's one part. And then number two, I saw that you speak Vietnamese. I mean, tell me more about yourself, your background, and how all of this stuff took place, all right?
Yeah, so I speak Vietnamese. I served a mission for my church for a couple of years. Not in Vietnam, but in the San Jose, California area, where there's a big Vietnamese population. So I learned it kind of serving the Vietnamese community there. I've gotten a little rusty over the years just because I don't have a whole lot of people to talk to in Vietnamese, but I'm able to get by pretty well. We have patients every once in a while that come in who speak Vietnamese or speak Vietnamese almost exclusively, and I can get by, and I can kind of do what I need to do to make sure they understand what they need to understand for procedures and whatnot. I grew up in Oregon. Both my wife and I are from Oregon. We do have 5 kids together. I'm not sure how we do it sometimes with 5 kids. My wife is currently also getting her PhD in education. And she, I think the way that we do it is she's the awesome one. She's the one that keeps everything together. You know, even though she's also busy, without her, I don't know what we'd be doing. But in terms of, my background and training, I've been kind of all over the place. I did medical school at Tulane University in New Orleans. I did my ophthalmology residency in Buffalo, New York. I did a fellowship in anterior segment and refractive surgery in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now I'm practicing here in St. Louis at a practice called Brinton Vision, where we focus on refractive surgery, kind of full spectrum refractive surgery. And that's kind of where I am now. In terms of, how I got into ophthalmology, it wasn't what I was planning to get into initially. My dad is a general surgeon, so that's what I saw growing up. When I went to medical school, that's what I thought I wanted to do. I wanted to do what my dad did. I liked the idea of, helping people, fixing their problems with surgery. But when I did my rotations in medical school, I didn't really like the surgery rotation, as general surgery rotation, as much as I thought. Just kind of the work setting and the environment weren't a good fit for me, and the lifestyle wasn't really conducive to having a family. Like I said before, I have 5 kids. I want to be able to spend at least some time with them. So what I knew that I liked, kind of the surgical aspect of fixing problems in a very concrete and objective way, and helping people out in that way. I had a friend who was finishing residency at LSU in ophthalmology when I was in medical school. He just recommended I do a rotation in ophthalmology. I didn't really have much eye care exposure before that, but I did a rotation, and I was just hooked from there. I checked all the boxes of the things that I wanted to be a part of. I would be helping people in a meaningful way that had a huge impact on their life and their quality of life, and I was fixing problems, and the results were often immediate and very kind of objective. You could see what you were doing, and I just loved being able to help people like that.
I love how, like you said, you're interested in objectively, you could fix the parts that were messed up or broken or needing repair. Because so much of what we do as optometrists is very subjective when you think about refractive outcomes, yeah, and how we refract. But we need those objective, this is a clear lens, this is a clear cornea, to get to that subjective way for our patients to determine their vision. So we're so lucky to have surgeons that can do the objective part of this, yeah, profession when it comes to eye care.
Yeah. And even with, it's nice to be able to see, after somebody has a procedure, if they were -6 and then now they're down to Plano, you're able to see, like, this is what we did, and we were able to help them in this way, and you're able to see the results. That's what I really like to be able to see.
Well, let's talk a little bit about refractive surgery, because you did say that your office offers kind of a full spectrum of refractive care. Reports after reports on LASIK have kind of suggested that the rates of LASIK surgeries in the United States is relatively stagnant. We know during the recession that LASIK, just like most of our economy, kind of took a little bit of a hit. Have you been seeing the interest in LASIK begin to perk back up in more recent years?
We definitely have. I wasn't around practicing during the recession. I was still in undergrad in like 2008, 2009. So I wasn't able to see that downturn, but I definitely, definitely saw kind of a downturn with LASIK during that time period. But we have definitely seen a kind of a steady increase in patient interest in the recent years. And I think there are a couple different things that might be driving this. One is increasing kind of patient confidence in improving technology. LASIK has been out for over 20 years now. It's been, you know, 2019 was the 20-year anniversary of LASIK approval by the FDA. And it's just the technology's gotten better and better over time. People are seeing kind of the long-term outcomes now over the past 20 years. And, you know, patient confidence in the procedure is continuing to increase. The other thing I think that is really driving people's interest in refractive surgery in general is just the increase in options and choices that people have. There are multiple laser options. There's PRK, there's LASIK, there's SMILE, as well as lens-based refractive surgery, which is where we're seeing a lot of the growth that we're seeing now, not only with like things like ICLs, where we're able to treat a lot of people who maybe weren't good LASIK candidates in the past because of thin corneas or irregular corneas or very high prescriptions, but also with refractive lens exchange, which there's a huge percentage of the population who, you know, there are these folks who used to never need glasses, who started to need readers in their 40s, and now maybe who are in bifocals, who are in an age range where they're more financially stable and they're looking into lifestyle improvement technology, and they want to be able to see without glasses and have, and, you know, we have the technology to give that to a lot of people. And I think the word is getting out that there, you know, there are more options these days. We're able to customize treatments more to people's ages and anatomy and health and all these different things. And we're able to just treat more people that we weren't able to before. It just opens the door to so many more patients and possibilities for our patients.
You know, I would love to dive a little deeper into the various options. I mean, I would love to be able to break down each one because there's a lot of young optometrists, millennial optometrists, and even seasoned optometrists that listen to this podcast. And with the technology changing so much, let's just take it from the top and break down the basic parameters or some things that you look for each one of these refractive procedures that would be the ideal candidate. So when our patients come in, we can just have a little more knowledge and clarity to bring to them when we're discussing these options for them.
Yeah, so I'd say the patient who has the most options at their disposal are the young kind of mid-range myopes. They often will have the option of multiple laser procedures, you know, PRK and LASIK, you know, depending on corneal thickness or the regularity of their cornea. There's also SMILE, which has been around for a number of years now. It's continuing to increase in popularity, and the outcomes look great with that as well. You know, if some people are more concerned about dry eye issues, sometimes SMILE will be better. Or so a lot of times, and if you're kind of a minus four range, we could do any of those options. Even sometimes in the right patient, ICL would be a good option for them as well. You know, a lot of things that we're looking at is the cornea. Is the cornea safe to use a laser to reshape the cornea? If it's not, then it's either they're not a good candidate for surgery, or sometimes they're a good candidate for the ICL. ICL patients, you know, it's not just these days for patients who are very high myopes. You know, if the patient has the right eye anatomy and they're a good candidate, if they're not a good candidate for a laser procedure and they're in the range that the ICL can correct, we'll, you know, talk to them about the options that they have with ICL, and the ICL can give excellent vision. I think some of our happiest patients sometimes are ICL patients, just in terms of the quality of the vision. But, you know, in terms of, it's really hard to give paint kind of broad, in terms of, you know, ICL is a great option for patients who are, you know, high myopes or may not be good candidates for LASIK. Refractive lens exchange, you know, usually is for the crowd who's become presbyopic already, and based on their prescription, whether they're hyperopic or they're myopic, there are different options in terms of the lenses we can use to kind of customize their vision to help, you know, give them what they need in terms of distance and up close, and kind of customize it that way. So there are just a lot of great options for people these days. And it all just, there are a lot of things that we look at, and there's a lot of nuance that goes into the decision making. But
you know what? I'm so glad that we're talking about this today, because the other day, Jen and I, we were sitting down having a conversation just about myopia. You know, with so many people becoming more myopic, we're seeing that prescription shift quite a bit. But I was bringing up at one point, you know, hey, I'm starting to see more people in their mid to late 20s start to stabilize because of the high near demand on computers, schoolwork, and things like that. But I know, also she was telling me that she tends to see it a little younger. What age are you actually seeing people stabilize with their prescription where you feel confident with pursuing refractive surgery?
Yeah, so we, you know, it all is based on the patient and what they're doing. You know, how old they are. We take, you know, getting information from their optometrist, especially if they're a referral from an optometrist, that's extremely helpful to say, yeah, they've had a stable refraction for 2-3 years. And even though they're 20, you know, I think things will be stable. If they're still in school, like if they're going to medical school or optometry school or law school where they're going to be reading a lot, you know, there have been some studies that show that there's still some progression. And, you know, oftentimes we're still able to treat those patients and we can kind of, you know, just treat that basically kind of treat them according to how we expect their eyes will age. If we sometimes we can leave them with a little bit of, you know, just a quarter unit of farsightedness that gives them some growing room. And if we need to do an enhancement down the road, that's often an option as well, too.
Are there any myths that you feel like persist among patients who come in interested in talking to you about refractive surgery? Because I know in my own practice, I oftentimes will see patients very confused about, oh, well, I think I should wait till I'm in my 40s or 50s because my eyes might keep changing. And then I, you know, will often be telling them like, oh, in my opinion, we shouldn't wait that long because at that point your eyes are going to be changing for a totally different reason. But are there some general trends or comments that you hear from patients that are incorrect frequently in your practice?
Yeah, so one of the things, so there are a number of different things that I hear that are kind of myths. One thing that I'm still surprised that I hear people come in is the fact they're told, or they've heard in the past that they have astigmatism and LASIK or vision correction can't treat astigmatism. I still hear that all the time, and that is definitely a myth. That's not the case at all. We're able to treat astigmatism very, very effectively these days. Another other concerns that people have about the safety and the technology. You know, modern LASIK and vision correction are some of the safest and most studied medical procedures in the world. Now, there are risks, but there are risks with everything. You know, vision correction has never been better or safer than it is now. You know, we're able to, you know, with centration of the treatments that's been improved with pupil tracking, mitomycin, lots of just things over the years that we've developed, mitomycin C to reduce the incidence of haze. Our femtosecond lasers have gotten better and better. There are fewer flap complications. You know, glare and halo have been reduced with kind of blended zones. Just the technology has just gotten so much better over the years. And there's this myth that people have, some people have perpetuated that ophthalmologists, you know, won't get LASIK themselves. But it's actually been studied that refractive surgeons, you know, the ones who are doing it the most, who see this these patients the most, are actually 4 times more likely to have laser vision correction than the general population. And to me, that's just a testament to, you know, how good the technology is, that the people who are doing it every day, day in and day out, feel confident enough in it that they are, that they will have it performed on themselves and their family members.
That's a great stat to hear. I know a lot of times, Daryl, patients will ask me why I haven't done it. And as an optometrist, you know, we all have our individual reasons. But I think it's great to for them to hear with from surgeons like, oh, yeah, I do this procedure and I believe in it so much. I've done it on myself and my family members.
Yeah. Another thing that we do hear, you know, is that people come in thinking, even when they call in, you know, asking about booking an appointment with us, they're concerned, am I too old? You know, some people think, or they don't see us because they think that they're too old. But with our modern technology, you know, we routinely see patients in our clinic for vision correction in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and we even have patients in their 80s. And so we, you know, pretty much anybody in their 20s on up, we were able to, as long as they're good candidates, we're able to help them out usually.
Well, let's talk about some of the really cutting edge technology that's changing refractive outcomes for patients in that older category that you mentioned when they get into their 70s and 80s. They're probably, if they haven't already, going to be needing a cataract surgery. And one of the newest things that have come out in that front is light adjustable IOLs. So this is something that you're using in your practice, and you're one of the early adopters on the technology. What do we need to know?
Yeah, so the light adjustable lens is an awesome new technology that allows us really to customize someone's vision after a lens replacement surgery like we've never been able to do before. In the past, the way it's worked is we would use a modern kind of IOL formula that are excellent, but there's still variables like the effect of lens position and where the lens will settle in the capsule, surgically induced astigmatism, and just kind of how a patient heals that can affect the outcomes. And especially things like having prior LASIK or RK can make it more difficult for us to predict how a patient's vision is going to heal after a cataract surgery or just any lens replacement surgery. So what the light adjustable lens does is the procedure is the same. The old lens comes out the same way with phacoemulsification. The new lens is a silicone lens that's inserted the same as you would insert it for any other surgery. But it's made up of these, what they call them macromers. They're molecules that when they're exposed to UV light, they'll migrate and they'll change the shape of the lens and thus the refractive power of the lens. So after the initial procedure, the lens replacement procedure, we let them heal for a period of time, depending on the situation, and then we'll get their refraction. We're able to put that refraction into what's called a light delivery device. And then we tell the light delivery device kind of where we want the patient to be refraction-wise. If we want them to be plano, or if we're going with monovision, we want them to be -1.5 or what have you. And then the light delivery device will deliver UV light in a pattern that causes those macromers to activate and kind of migrate to change the shape of the lens to give it the desired power. So basically we're able to change the power of the lens up to 3 times actually, and allows for a customization of the patient's vision in a way that we've never been able to do before. So especially in patients who maybe we wouldn't be able to do a LASIK enhancement, or they've had prior RK or prior LASIK, it really allows us to get a level of accuracy that in a way is almost unprecedented.
Now, what are the side effects of this? I mean, do you get any PCOs on this? Are there any more issues with increasing maybe dry eyes? I mean, what takes place as a side effect or side result of this type of procedure?
Yeah, so PCO, I haven't yet seen kind of an increase in PCO. It's still early after the procedure. You know, and most patients, at some point in their lives, I would expect them to eventually, you know, get PCO that needs to be treated. I haven't yet seen any kind of increase in PCO so far. In terms of side effects, you know, the things we really need to watch out for there are certain contraindications to where it's not a good idea to use a lens. And those are things that would basically where UV light could exacerbate them. So it does give a pretty hefty dose of UV light, where if somebody has some bad macular disease or if they have a prior kind of herpetic infection that could be exacerbated or come back from a lot of UV light, sometimes those aren't good candidates for the procedure, just because we don't want to worsen some, you know, macular degeneration or cause a recurrence of HSV or, you know, a shingles infection, something like that. Those are the biggest things we need to watch out for. There are also some medications that kind of cause your retina and your skin also to be more sensitive to light. And sometimes those patients aren't good candidates if they're taking those medications, or they would need to stop taking those medications just because, you know, it's a, you know, the UV light, we don't want it to cause any issues with the retina, and, you know, in an eye that has, it's more sensitized to light from a medication, we just want to make sure we're staying on the safe side of things. In terms of dry eye, I haven't noticed any increased, of that in my patients who we've used the light adjustable lens. The biggest, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it a side effect or just something that the patients need to deal with, is these you have to, the patient has to wear they're called UV blocking glasses up until the lens is fully adjusted and kind of what we call locked in. So the macromers inside the lens, if they're exposed to UV light from the sun, that same UV light will change the shape of the lens in an uncontrolled manner. So there are these special glasses that the patients have to wear for a few weeks after the surgery to protect the lens from uncontrolled UV light exposure. And they have to wear these dark ones when they're outside in the sun, and when they're inside, they wear clear ones. And it's just very important for the patient to wear those. So that's something where we try to make sure the patient is aware and okay with up front that they're going to be wearing these glasses for that period of time. Because if they don't feel comfortable wearing the glasses, if they don't want to wear them, or they don't feel like they can be depended on to wear them consistently, then it wouldn't be a good idea to do the procedure. So it could, it's unsafe to not have a controlled, to have an uncontrolled UV light exposure on that lens.
In addition to the sunglasses that you're talking about, or these special glasses, what other post-op treatment is there? Are we using some type of topical drop, steroid, antibiotic? What else is being used with this procedure?
Yeah, so in general, the healing with this procedure is pretty much the same as your standard cataract or refractive lens exchange procedure. The post-op drop regimen is the same for us, regardless of whether someone's having the light adjustable lens or kind of conventional IOL. The only thing really that's different for the patient is wearing those UV blocking glasses, and they have to see us more frequently. You can do up to 3 adjustments. Usually we tell patients just to fine tune things as much as possible, that we'll plan on seeing them for light treatments about 3 to 5 times, just because they're the lock-in procedure. Can sometimes you need 1 or 2, lock-in procedures to really lock in the lens, so it's what you've put in terms of the shape of the lens stays put long term. And so they have to make sure that they like us and they like seeing us, because we're going to be seeing them a lot in the first couple of months after the surgery. Some of those visits can take a little longer, maybe an hour or two, just because they have to be dilated, because you have to expose the whole lens to the light. So those are the 2 main things that are different in terms of the post-op experience for the patient. Otherwise, drops are the same, and the post-op healing course is very similar.
As far as what the lens can adjust for, if there's astigmatism showing through that's unexpected, is that something that can be adjusted with the IOL or only spherical equivalents?
So yeah, definitely. There you are able to adjust both sphere and cylinder with the light adjustable lens. So it's a great option if someone has a lot of astigmatism to, instead of thinking about maybe a toric lens where you're concerned about rotation, you put in a light adjustable lens, have them wear the glasses for a few weeks, tell them, the vision's not going to be perfect for a while, but that lens will kind of stabilize in the bag. You know exactly where it's going to be. You know it's going to stay where it is. And then at the three-ish week mark, you can start doing adjustments and correcting that astigmatism and dial in the right amount of kind of a toric correction that patient needs.
I'd love to get your advice on how to talk to patients about this, because, a higher technology like this is going to carry an out-of-pocket expense with it. And with traditional cataract surgery, I tell my patients to expect they're going to need glasses for their best vision afterwards. When you're discussing this type of technology with patients, is that an expectation they should have too? Or you tell them, like, with this lens, our goal is that you won't have to have glasses for your best vision afterwards?
Yeah, so it's all about the patient education and setting the correct expectations. In this group of patients with a light adjustable lens, depending on the patient, the goal can be a high level of spectacle independence. There are situations where sometimes folks who, let's say we set them up with monovision, they still may feel like they need a pair of reading glasses every once in a while to kind of fine tune the vision if they're threading a needle or something like that, or maybe sharpen up the distance at nighttime in bad driving conditions. But we offer this to our refractive lens exchange patients who are, you know, looking to get out of glasses as much as possible. And we've seen great results from that. And it's definitely, when talking with patients, if their goal is to, you know, get out of glasses as much as possible, I think the Leiter's Dispel lens is a great tool to do that.
Daryl, I'm sure you've had this happen in patient care, but I think this is so great to have a flexible option. As much as we talk about and we demo to patients, a lot of times what I've seen, especially our myopic patients, they're so excited about their cataract surgery, perfecting their distance vision. And then they'll come back in for their post-operative visit and they are like, oh, I just thought my vision would be better. And I'm like, what do you mean you're seeing 20/20? Like, yeah, but now I have to use reading glasses all the time. And it's kind of like one of those situations where I know we talked about that and that was expected and that was normal. But until they live in those eyes, they really don't truly understand what those eyes are going to be like. And I love that there's like, okay, well, you don't like this. Maybe we give you a little monovision now. And there's that adjustment after they live in it for, you know, a month or so, where that's editable now.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, that situation, you can even, you know, plan for the patient to end up with monovision. And if you could have them live that for a while, and if they don't like it, you take it away with your first adjustment, have them live that, and they can say, oh yeah, this is way better, I'm fine with wearing readers, or oh my gosh, I give me that back. And you know, we have another chance with a second adjustment to give them that monovision back. So it just allows us to let the patient kind of test drive it a little bit sometimes. You know, there are limits, but it does allow us a lot more latitude when in terms of letting the patients see what their vision can be like in different situations.
Now that's very cool. That's truly making something custom. And I know patients will love that and probably pay the premium for that as well. I mean, can you imagine that, Jen, telling your patients that, hey, you can try this out, and you know, they go to the surgeon and they come out with distance vision only correction, but then they want to try mono, and then they go to mono and love it, and they have that option to go back and forth. I know it's limited, but you know how many smiles you actually receive in the office and how many hugs you probably get as well?
That's the most incredible part to this technology, is so many people after their outcome probably question, like, should I have done this a little bit different? Maybe this wasn't the type of implant. Maybe I should have gotten that toric implant or that multifocal implant that they told me about.
Yeah.
Knowing that they have some flexibility to make changes if the outcome isn't what they wanted, you know, to me, that's very much worth the presentation to our patients, that this is a technology you should consider. And when the surgeon brings it up, the flexibility of your outcomes is something that is worth that out-of-pocket expense.
Yeah, we, you know, it's hard. It's hard for patients. You know, I haven't gone through the process of, you know, needing cataract surgery, but, you know, it's hard for somebody coming in with no background in, you know, understanding the eyes and how they work and making big decisions that will affect the rest of your life, and, you know, making it kind of in the office and having to decide right now. And there, you know, there's money on the line as well. They have to pay money for these, you know, refractive options. And this just gives the patient a little bit of breathing room where, you know, we are able to customize it afterwards, and they're able again to kind of test drive it and live it, before everything is kind of set in stone.
So Dr. Tersini, how available is this technology right now?
So as far as I understand, you know, the lens has been approved by the FDA for a while now. It's been available commercially for, I think, the past 6 months. I could be wrong on the timing there. And there, you know, not everybody has the technology right now. There are only kind of certain practices right now that have the technology. We're the only one in Missouri, as far as I understand, or as far as I know right now. But more and more practices are getting it. You know, you do have to, in addition to having the lens, you have to have the light delivery device. So there's kind of an investment that has to be made there. It's slowly being rolled out. They're just kind of taking their time and making sure that the people who have it are using it appropriately and are having good results, and then they slowly kind of increase where it's being offered.
So Dr. Tersini, what's next? I mean, this is cutting edge technology. You're able to make this more custom for the patient that comes in, whether they want distance vision, mono vision, going back to distance vision. You can deal with the sphere power, cylinder. What's next? I mean, this is pretty cutting edge technology. I don't know how much better you can get than what's available right now. But what do you see in the future in regards to refractive surgery down the road?
Yeah, so there, I think there are a lot of things down the road. It's a very exciting time. There are new lasers right now, LASIK, excimer lasers that are being studied in U.S. trials for FDA approval. There are, the ICL is currently in clinical trials right now. Change the lens that would kind of reduce the amount of procedures that you'd need to do to have the procedure from two procedures down to just one. Really kind of simplifying and improving the process there for patients. And in terms of the light adjustable lens, I believe that the company is looking into also in addition to adjusting sphere and cylinder, also adding kind of extended depth of focus to the lens as well. So you can give them a little bit of extended depth of focus and see how they like that. And you can, I believe, don't quote me, but I believe you can take it away if they don't like some of the side effects they may have with that. Treating presbyopia in that way as well, kind of being able to adjust it in that way. Down the road, there's always IOL technology that's being studied and in my fellowship, I was able to see a lot of studies and be involved in studies for IOLs that are kind of on the road to approval. And it's hard to say timeline wise when things will come out, but it's a very exciting time in just ophthalmology and refractive surgery, especially with so many new options for patients and different things that we can do and sometimes things correcting and fixing things in ways that we used to not be able to.
Well, as soon as we can get extended depth of focus with this type of lens, just sign me up, Daryl. I'm just going to go ahead and have cataracts. Can you imagine how great that would be?
Like Dr. Tersini said, we are in great times in eye care, and I'm looking forward to the innovation. If anyone wants to reach out to you and just learn more about, this technology or learn more about you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
So if anybody, is interested, they can always call our office. Our practice is called Brinton Vision. You can Google us. Our phone number is there on the web. You can email me with specific questions. I'm happy to answer any emails from any, optometrists out there who have questions about this type of technology. My email is S and then my last name, Tersini, Tersigni, at BrintonVision.com. Have questions about this technology or anything else we talked about today.
Thank you again so much for your time. And we can't wait to get back with you in a couple of years when we've got the next round of this great technology coming out.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.